Good morning. You're tuned into Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. My name is Brooke Schaefer, and I'm in the studio with Dr. Ann Zink, the Chief Medical Officer for the state of Alaska. Dr. Zink, thank you for being here this morning.
Oh, it's so great to be here, Brooke. It's a beautiful studio and great to be in Sitka.
Well, it's great to have you, and it's fun to have you here. People have heard your name and heard your voice over these last few years quite a lot. And now you're here in person, and people in Sitka will get a chance to meet you in person, too. You're going to be giving a presentation this afternoon at 4 o'clock at the Sheetkakwan Nakahiti. And what is the name of that presentation?
Yeah, so I'm going to be talking about the kind of impacts of COVID, just reflection of where we've come from, but really looking forward and toward the future and what lessons have been learned.
Okay, great. So this is all going to be about, I guess, the experience of the state during this pandemic, but how you're using that experience for movement forward to be more prepared. We'll get into a little bit of that. So I guess let's start with the perspective that I guess you were searching for, you've been searching for, is the what you learned from this pandemic. And so I'd love to talk a little bit about what, from your perspective, the state has learned from this pandemic.
Oh man, there's so much. And actually, in preparation of these slides, I was going back through some of those PowerPoint presentations that were way too often on the TV and radio that people saw and listened to early on in 2020. We've learned a ton. We've learned a tremendous amount, not just about this virus, but about the ways that we respond as people, as Alaskans, as individuals. At the end of the day, though, I hope that what we will take from this pandemic is a sense of resilience and strength. It was just a phenomenal opportunity and privilege to see communities and communities of strength come together and respond to a huge existential crisis in really powerful ways. You know, we lost a lot of Alaskans. People got sick. There was a lot of loss with, you know, industry and business and commerce and school and kids. And my kids were impacted. We were all impacted one way or another. But when I look at our data compared to national data, when I hear our stories compared to national stories, I am just so honored to be in this state where communities in this home rule state figured out solutions that made sense for their community and responded with strength and resilience and compassion. And I hope that we're able to take those lessons and move forward. And I hope that we're able to take the lessons of how so much of our health is determined by things outside of healthcare. And we're able to every day be as prepared for our own health and well-being. We were talking earlier, and I'm less concerned about the next pandemic, and I'm more concerned about my next shift. And so what ways can we be braiding in health and wellness into everyday activity? And so that's a lot of my focus now with the state. And so I'll be talking about that. And we'll be taking questions afterwards as well, because I have found throughout this, the two-way dialogue has been incredibly helpful. You know, the state of Alaska is not like a thing over there. It is all of us. It is you. It is me. It's the people who are listening to the radio show. It's going to take all of us to create solutions for health and well-being and really just invite that conversation.
Well, and one thing we chatted about before we came on the air was how Alaska was kind of taken as a lump. The CDC sort of reported us as one big unit, but we're such a huge state and there are such major differences between Southeast Alaska and interior and North and interior. And so being able to have the opportunity to ask you questions and also share a little bit of the perspective of folks here is quite exciting, I would think, for listeners. They can kind of get to help give information about their own experience and what it is in Sitka. And so with that in mind, I kind of want to focus in on some of the things that I know we talked about, so many things that you sort of learned and focused on, the cultural influence, stories from elders, supplies, getting supplies to Alaska. A couple of things that really maybe are particular to Sitka that we could chat a little bit about are the fishing industry and tribal sovereignty. And I think there's some interesting aspects to both of those things. So let's talk a little bit about the fishing industry first.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I sometimes would joke that the thing I learned the most about the pandemic was about fishing. I didn't grow up fishing. I don't know fishing. I live in Palmer where there's not as much fishing. So it's not as much of a part of our daily cultural experience in that part of Alaska than it is down here or in other places within the state. But it was interesting during the 1918 pandemic, the influenza virus came in primarily via fishing. And it also came in somewhat by mail, but mainly via fishing. And so communities that kept fishermen out and kept mail out continued to have culture and identity and did not see the loss that communities had where it came in, particularly during fishing. And we started to see the same thing here in the pandemic. In fact, our very first case was a cargo pilot. You know, we're the third busiest cargo airport now in the world. Like, we have a lot of people who come in and out. And for fishing, we have a lot of people who come in and out, and there's a lot of movement. And in all of our data and statistics, they don't necessarily count on a map. So if you're looking at a resident population, you might have a very large transient population that supports fishing that isn't, quote, counted in that resident population. So you're looking at vaccine allocation or testing or cases per capita, who's a resident, who's a non-resident. All of those were huge challenges, particularly early on in the pandemic, that the CDC, others, that was just too nuanced and too small and granular of the data. You know, there's a new data center at CDC called CFA, their Center for Forecasting and Analytics. And there was a great analogy about weather. And, you know, we all are used to looking at our phones and like a 5-day confidence interval weather forecast that tells you kind of, I can predict till this much, this is what we see. And we make decisions on it, right? Like, I wore my rain jacket today. I mean, I probably could have guessed for Sitka, but, you know, there was a chance. So I checked that out before I came in. So how can we make sure that data is flexible like that so that we would have the same thing for respiratory diseases or other infectious diseases? So like the Sitka map could really show the 5-day kind of overall, which is going to be really different than like Utvi-Outvik's data. But the CDC, it's more like the weather is the whole space. And Dr. Walensky had a quote the other day. She said, your head might be in the fire and your feet might be in the freezer and your average temperature is just fine, but your experience is really different. And I think that was really the experience in Alaska in many ways. And so particularly with fishing, we just really had to stand in. And I am incredibly grateful for the fishing companies and the independent fishermen and the all the towns and communities where it was amazing partnership to say, how can we maintain fishing and livelihood and business and economy and food, frankly? I mean, there was a real time of food scarcity where it looks like we might be cut off from the Port of Seattle and might not be getting any food up to Alaska. Like, it was kind of during this really almost high anxiety time of what are we going to make sure there's enough food for people? Like, that has to be our number one focus. And so there was a lot of partnership. And to this day, we don't have cases that we know of where COVID entered a community because of the fishing industry, which is just fundamentally a different story than the 1918 pandemic. And that's because of elders who told the stories of the 1918 pandemic. That was because industry partners. That was because community partners who said, this is important to us and we need to figure out how to make it happen. And all of that partnership was a lot of work, but led to fishing being able to continue to happen, people not getting sick from it, and being able to move on. And I think that is the place of resilience, that cultural, industry, community partnership that I saw throughout Alaska, but particularly in communities like Sitka, where there are the connection between business, industry, community, tribal sovereignty really come together.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's a little bit of hope. Like, it does touch on this idea of tribal sovereignty and historical trauma. And so the 1918 pandemic was devastating and to certain populations, and certain populations were ignored. And this kind of shows that maybe things were handled a little bit differently and some power was given to tribal citizens and they were included in the conversation to make things safe for the communities. I don't know if that's how you would describe it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I learned so much from our tribal partners, from tribal elders. You know, I can tell you story after story of tribal elders telling really powerful and very meaningful stories that changed my outlook on my response, changed my outlook on health. And oftentimes when I meet with other state health officials, I feel incredibly blessed by the knowledge that people have shared with me that made my job easier, made my job more fulfilling, that they were lacking. Like, I look at how hard their job was and they didn't have tribal sovereignty. They didn't have elders giving them advice. And I am just really grateful for that space. I think there was a lot of stepping on each other's toes early on in the pandemic. So for example, IHS sent in, you know, some Abbott Now testing machines. We got in some Abbott Now testing machines. And based on the way that things were kind of calculated, not realizing it, we both sent them to some areas and didn't send them to others. And so it became really clear early on that we were going to have to work really closely together. So we really tried to build in our tribal partners at every single level. So Healthy Alaskans 2030 is our state health improvement plan. We're the only state that jointly does it with our tribal partners. And so basically we did the same thing for vaccines. And so we said at every level on planning, on distribution, on calculations, we're going to have a tribal partner and we're going to have a state partner co-lead that work group. And so all 229 federally recognized sovereign tribes opted to come with the state. We're the only state that was the case. But by being able to do that, we were able to really pool resources and be able to get vaccine out much, much faster and much more efficiently. So it wasn't like one IHS vial going here and one state vial going here. You could put one vial that went out and move as quickly as possible. But then tribes also had sovereignty to say, okay, we're going to vaccinate our language learners first. We're going to vaccinate our fishermen first. We're going to vaccinate our pilots first. We're going to vaccinate our school teachers first, because those are key members of our community. And, you know, in the state, I saw us as a little bit as like the Amazon shipping supply service. Like, we weren't there to necessarily say this or that, but we were here just to empower to get out vaccine. We would say our goal is fast and fair. Like, how can we do this as fast and fair as possible? And allowing people to make that decision. And every day I would look at Twitter or Facebook, or someone would send me some email, and it would be, you know, a boat taking it to small communities. Mm. It would be, you know, a dog sled going to certain communities. It would be a plane landing in one community and doing one for a community health worker, and so on and so forth. So we just got out of the way and let others. It also allowed us much more leverage, honestly, at a federal level. And so a week prior to the vaccine rollout, we realized that the way that Hay calculated the tribal vaccine was going to put Alaska at a significant disadvantage, like a very significant disadvantage. And I said, this is not the state's decision. This is tribal sovereignty. This is their information to know. And I'm going to tell them. And then, you know, they need to know this information. So we talked with our tribal partners, and very quickly, because of their partnership and work collaboratively federally, we were able to really make sure that the tribes in Alaska were treated fairly and were treated like tribes in the lower 48, which drastically impacted the amount of vaccine that we had in the first few months in the state.
Well, there's so much more to talk about, but we're well over time. Oh, so no, I just want to invite listeners to come out tonight to meet you, Dr. Ann Zink, and to ask questions and to listen to you talk a little bit about this whole experience. Go to the Shikaquan Nakahiti Community House at 4 p.m. this afternoon. Dr. Ann Zink, thank you so much for being here this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka.